the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Week, episode 58, recorded Friday, September 14th, 2012. Apologetic Birds.
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing scan.
Week.
Online.
This is AV Week.
It's time for AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of audiovisual news and information. My name is Tim Albright, your host. Thank you so much for joining us. With us this week is Matt D. Scott. He is from Omega Audio Video, and he's my Canadian friend. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Proud to be your Canadian friend.
Well, you know, there's only one of you, so.
I know.
You're the one and only. You're also my one and only friend, but we won't go into that. It'll make me cry. So with this is Uncle Richie, Rich Fregosa from FregosaDesign.com. How are you, sir?
Hello, puppets.
Jeez, I said uncle, not Aunt Richie.
I'm sorry. I just said Mrs. Doubtfire moment in there.
And last but not least is Matt Cooper from Rave Pubs. How are you, sir?
Hey, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. This week we're going to talk about Cydia and nothing but, really. It ended about a week ago and all three gentlemen were there. We did this about a year ago. It was such a huge flop that I figured I'd try it one more time. I'm joking. It was actually one of my favorite shows last year, so I figured I'd talk to some more really cool and really smart people who were in Indianapolis this week. Or last week, rather, and also going to touch on a couple other options, items. But first, really, it is going to be kind of about Cydia and what came out of that. There has been a number of articles written, and Rave Pubs has done a ton of videos. They actually still have the portal up and going. RaveNowCydia.com. See, that's why you're here, Matt. That's still up and running, and that has all sorts of videos and you know, blogs and product reviews and stuff. Our buddies over at CE Pro did a huge thing. They also had a number of bloggers. Rich was one. Our buddy Johnny Moda. Was Johnny one of Julie's?
Johnny was not part of the blog mob. Okay. Johnny was part of the Cydia Tweeps, which was the Cydia-sponsored social media team.
Okay. He is still an official member of the Rave Blog Squad.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he was given a shirt. Well, I was hoping that he'd be on to tell the story of why he had the shirt.
He was supposed. Johnny is entirely too busy. Let's start there. Okay.
Yeah.
The man is entirely too busy. He has got his Twitter. He has got his Facebook. He's got everything else. And oh yeah, he has a real full time job. So, he sent me a note. I think yesterday or Wednesday. He's like, dude, I am so sorry. I can't get out of this. And then we talked about some other stuff and. But yeah, he was supposed to be on, but he is entirely too slammed with a real job, you know. So something that, you know, I guess I don't have because I do.
Aren't
this.
Aren't getting paid for this?
No.
What?
So yeah, Cydia was last
week. I am firing my agent. This is unbelievable.
Last
pro bono, but.
Jeez, Cydia is this. If you don't know what Cydia is, we're 5 minutes into this, and I'm already lost control. Cydia is the residential version of Infocom. Is that fair, guys?
Yeah. It's the CI market.
Yes, the CI market, the custom installation, or as we learned last year, it's the ESCII market. That's a long
whatever the acronym of the
what
day
was
that?
What was the ESCII? Electronic Service.
Electronic System Contractor.
That's what it was. Okay. Did we come up with a new?
I think we now went to ESI, Electronic System Integrator.
ESI.
I don't know. I haven't received the new memo yet. So just want to go back to VCR Repairman.
There we go. Rich is the VCR Repairman. And their show was this past week in Indianapolis. What you've got here is you have a lot of the same guys that are going to Infocom only for the residential side, but you have some people that would never go or may never go to Infocom simply because their wheelhouse really is really is residential. It is the home market. Rich, we're going to start with you on this. What was like one or two things that just knocked your socks off, and one or two things that you were like, eh, really, you spent the money for a booth this year, did you?
You know, I mean, the thing that really caught my attention was the sheer amount of focus on networking. Hmm. Everything had either Wi-Fi chip built in or an Ethernet port, IP control, an iPad interface, you know, and you know, leading into even NFC made an appearance at CEDIA this year. And we can get into it. And so the size of the Crestron booth, it was you couldn't miss it. You know, it had its own gravitational field, I think, at one really? Point. It was monstrous, absolutely monstrous. It was pretty much everything they had was right there. In terms of, you know, JVC had a really good setup. Obviously, Sony showed off their 4K line. So they shot off their 4K projector and their 84-inch, they had that on the floor. I think the one thing that caught me with the Sony was when they were, because again, the hardest part is getting 4K material. They did a 2K that was up-converted, which looked okay. They did a 4K, which was a little odd, but the thing that absolutely blew me away was they threw up a static photo of full resolution from like an 8-megapixel camera or something like that. And I think during the demo I tweeted, I think I just pooped myself. It made me stop and just go, holy moly. Once that thing clicked in. And if that is where 4K or 8K or whatever the next progression is going to be for the video, pretty neat. In terms of, for me, my first love being audio, the Steinway Lingdorf demo was flat out amazing.
What was that?
For me. Steinway Lingdorf is a, obviously, Steinway piano there in the cases, but they are a line source speaker, and basically these 7-foot-tall speakers, a huge array of subs, a full amplification system, and the it's a $500,000 worth of audio, and it flat out blew my socks off. It rivaled any of the high end demos that I listened to at CES last year. You know, for $500,000, it better. But it was, they played a clip from Open Range, the Western, and the ability to recreate the gunshots. I talked to a couple of the reviewers after. They actually had said, you know, the bad news about, you know, putting it on a clip that has gunshots and it being that realistic, most people, when they're next to a gun, wear earmuffs. So, you know, maybe we didn't think this all the way through, but the audio reproduction obviously was fantastic. And then a lot of sound bars, a lot of really high quality sound bars. Everybody from Golden Ear Technology to Leon speakers. I mean, you know, everybody, you name them, was at that point pretty much showing that they're, you know, with these displays now getting thinner and smaller, they all need augmentation. I think ADA came out with a little tiny amplifier that takes the digital out of the TV and then uses it to power a soundbar or speakers. Because more and more, what's going to happen is we're going to see displays with either smaller speakers or there's not going to be any analog outputs on them anymore. Yeah. So this is already thinking ahead to a little device that you can basically slap onto the back of your display and give it a little bit of oomph. And they were doing a demo, which was nice. So it was basically, I think like Speakercraft did one where they had a big red button. And when you press the button, it killed the amplifier sound so you could hear what the TV speaker sounded like. And when you let the button go, it, you know, played through the sound bar. And it was a good demonstration of, you know, where we're having to look into new markets, because, you know, if you're not making money on TVs, then, you know, at least try to make something on audio.
Rich, are you talking the Speakercraft demo?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a soundbar.
What is
that's
it then?
That's the big, ugliest piece of crap I've ever seen.
Jeez.
Sound box, a squat.
Yeah, the huge monster, you know.
Okay, so it may not be aesthetically pleasing because you're a freaking designer, but it is sound good?
No, it sounds...
I like the demo. I like the fact that more than anything else from a sales presentation, you can do it from anything else, was a way of saying, look, you may not be getting the video sale anymore, so let's go ahead and find ways that you can generate this. So regardless of whose system is going in, I thought it was a very novel approach that, you know, pretty much anybody, regardless of commercial or residential, was to be able to show the difference in upsell. So for me, it was more from a marketing standpoint. I thought that was a very novel idea.
The marketing standpoint was great. The only issue I took with it, and I tweeted it exactly, I took a picture of that big monster box and said, what the heck is this doing here? Why is this at our show? Because it goes against 90% of what we actually try and do as far as not take a TV out of the box, put it on its stand, and put it on a cabinet. That's where I took my big issue from, especially when in speaking with one of their VPs, it came out that that box is going to be at every big box retailer across North America.
Yeah, and Magnolia Home Theaters, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's going to be all over the place. And looked at it and said, man, I don't, like, again, from a marketing standpoint of this is this and this is this, perfect. We actually do that at our home shows. We'll run, you know, full 5.1, and then we'll run the TV, and then we'll run a soundbar. But bringing, especially for Speakercraft, to say, you know, kind of a fall from grace, if you will, in the sense of attraction, yeah, I had major issues with that piece. But it did sound good.
It did. Well, see, that's the thing. It,
sorry,
as long
my
as it
rant
sounded good.
Is now over.
All right. Rich, what else did you see that kind of that so Matt can make fun of you?
The gem for me was tucked off to the side when I did the Crestron booth, was off to the side in a little bedroom vignette was a Panasonic phone with an integrated Android tablet running Crestron software.
I saw that. That is so cool.
It was awesome. I looked at that and went, this works. It made total sense. Oh. For me, it was the hit of the show.
All right, so hang on. Let's stop for a second and say that slowly so people can grasp that. It's a Panasonic phone.
It's a Panasonic phone.
Telephone. So next to your bed. Yes.
Yeah, next to your bed. Next to your bed
or you know, in the kitchen or whatever, running an Android tablet.
Which then had the Crestron software on it.
I just heard
the same. Yeah, so the same thing that you use for your Android tablets normally or your iPad was built right into the phone. And it was sitting on top. And so as the true home controller, which is, you know, it's the perfect bedside companion.
Yeah.
Just blew me away. Instead of having like a, you know, the normal situation is that you get this conglomeration of devices. You've got like your Lightning keypad, and then you've got your touch panel, and then you've got, you know, maybe your alarm clock, and then you've got the phone. And so, you know, you need like a 6 foot wide, you know, bedside station. It was all sitting right there. And it was, like I said, and they forgot to promote it. It was just sitting there.
What do you mean they forgot to promote it?
They did.
Seriously?
They didn't talk about it at all.
They had so many things going on. I was actually being walked through the booth by the marketing and social media person, Jeffrey Mack. And I looked, I'm like, you guys don't understand how awesome this is. This is something that, you know, we can definitely see more of. And this makes use. This is the custom market. This is absolutely something residentially that people would look at and go, I would buy that. I would absolutely buy that.
You mean Singer didn't have that in his PowerPoint presentation?
You know, there was a big push for everything else. You mean it was a long presentation, man.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of stuff. There was a lot of stuff. But for me, definitely that part of the show, that little Google touch panel Panasonic
phone. That is
phone,
so cool.
Was, like I said, just the little tiny hit. And little guys here and there. But I think kind of the trend for Cydia this year is that it wasn't so much about, you know, revolution. It was just evolution. You know, there was refinements to things that we had seen at Cydia last year, and then we saw the next increment at CES in January, and now we're starting to see these devices are, you know, they're getting ready to hit the market. So things that we saw a year ago, 6 months ago, they're now getting ready. You know, the new giant Madero panel from AMX was sweet.
Yes.
Sora is coming out with a waterproof touch-sensitive screen that they're working in conjunction with Crestron that was pretty darn cool.
You mean they're going to do away with this stupid UFO? I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the blue orb of rubbery goodness or whatever.
Rich, the name of the product name is freaking UFO. I mean, it's not even like they're trying anymore.
No. And it's a bit of a bear to deal with. So, no, it was fun. And, you know, and again, the other thing, you know, obviously, since we're on the podcast, was the amount of coverage that was there from different venues. I mean, the social media coverage that we had there, the different publishers, obviously Rave was there, you know, CE Pro, we were there in Forest Residential Systems. I mean, there was a lot of great coverage. And I think the great thing about it this year is that if you didn't attend, you could do a video or pictorial tour of every booth and get all of the information that you needed from the show if you didn't make it. So, you know, and again, kudos to Rave Pubs for their coverage. And I think it was second only to our coverage for CE Pro.
All right, Mr. Cooper, you were there as a journalistic entity. You were also at Infocom as well. So give me your one or two things that you thought like knocked them out of the park.
Let's see here. I mean, I think this has certainly been commented on before, but I mean, there's a lot more bleed through from, you know, Infocom Pro kind of show into, you know, CDS stuff with, you know, home integrators starting to move in that direction. I'd say, although, you know, I talked to a couple people who felt like there are some home integrators who were kind of wanting to move into a more commercial, you know, bars and restaurants and stuff, but sometimes, you know, they'll call up, say, a company that has, you know, a really high-end matrix switcher and then be blown away and by, you know, the cost involved in, you know, buying like a $30,000, you know, matrix switcher. But for the most part, I mean, I think, you know, and there, you know, a lot of digital signage, a lot of, I mean, I think things are just kind of moving in that direction as the recession drags on, I think. But yeah, I mean, I thought the show, you know, it was pretty awesome. The Sony 4K TV, one kind of thing I noticed about it was, I mean, honestly, I talked to Sarah Abrams, the editor of Rave, about this, and I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen the Elite, like Pioneer Elite displays. Honestly, I'd say they looked pretty much, I'd say unless they were completely side by side, I'd say a finely tuned 1080p image looked about as good as the 4K.
Really?
Video, anyway. I was just kind of, my opinion, I mean, 4K, even at 84 inches, I mean, 4K to me just makes more sense in a projector where you have, you know, 150-inch screen versus, you know, 80. Like, I mean, if your face is right next to it, you'll be able to see that extra detail. But, you know, if you're sitting on a couch a normal viewing distance away from a 4K TV, I feel like some of that information is just flying right by you. And I noticed too, I mean, that takes a lot of extra processing power. And if you look at, they actually had a short clip of some fake soccer footage, mm-hmm. and you could see the refresh rate on that. You could see it kind of like grinding from frame to frame a little bit sometimes. I mean, I guess, you know, I don't want to like poo-poo it too much. I mean, it's pretty nice. I mean, I would not turn one down if someone handed me one of these.
I would say from the digital signage and like from the digital art standpoint, and maybe not necessarily from the video standpoint, but the increased resolution, again, if you were using it for static displays or if you're using it for point of sale or something. I mean, there were some instances where, like I said, like when I saw they brought up a real high resolution photograph, and it just jumped off of the screen that, you know, definitely. Yeah. And with video, and again, because the problem is content, you know,
right.
it's everything that, you know, we wound up seeing, you know, at that point was, yeah, pretty much upsampled at that point. And so, you know, it's a chicken and egg thing again right now, which is, you know, who's going to go ahead and put the content out first? And are the displays going to go out first? Well, they're not going to push the content out until enough displays are out there. And so it winds up being this endless battle. But on the upside, at least they weren't talking about the 3D.
No, they've dropped that for the 8K now.
Yep.
It'll come back. Give it time.
Oh, hopefully not in my lifetime.
The funny thing is, we talked to one Sony guy who said the TV kind of outshined what they felt was going to be their primary announcement, which was the integration with Control 4 in one of their Sony receivers.
We talked about that a little bit last week, and that was interesting. We had a guy on from Casio about how those deals get done and how you make decisions on one or the other. And the funny thing is that everybody kind of jumped on me when I said that. That Sony thing has been in bed with everybody. I'm not trying to call it, you know, loose or has loose morals, but you can pretty much connect anything to that thing.
And it's not the first time that the powers that be who have worked with integration companies. I mean, Fast was the precursor to Control 4. There, you know, there years ago, this is 15 years ago when before AMX/Panja acquired them, they had this device called FastLink, and it was, you know, that was their big push, is that they were going to have FastLink, and, you know, I think it was like Mark Levinson products, and I mean across the board it was going to be, you know, built directly into these units, and it didn't quite pan out the way that people expected. Now maybe this will be a different Trojan horse, and they might get a little bit more traction, but kind of the response from a lot of people that I spoke to was, yeah, that's nice, we'll see how they sell it. You know, I mean, where are they going to come from? I mean, is it going to come from a big box retailer at that point? Well, then who's going to deploy it? You know, or are they going to, you know, are they going to try to hand it over to, you know, end user configuration? And it's nice. It's nice to see that at least somebody's trying and looking somewhere down the road. But I'll be interested to see in a year how many of these units, you know, how much throughput they get in terms of people who register and get this stuff on and turn it on, how much traction they're actually getting out of it.
Right. When you look at most of the marketing stuff on it, everything's saying, you know, kind of DIY, user configurable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, Mr. Scott, what is your favorite one or two things from CD this year? And don't tell me it's like some wireless shade from Lutron.
No, I can't.
No, you say no, I said, no, don't. That was last year's cool thing.
That was last year's cool thing. They did upgrade it this year, which is kind of cool.
They put wires on it now? So
they did put wires on it. Jeez. For seriously, for doors.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's a guide
good
wire.
Lord.
Yeah, they've got
you got Paisley crazy artistic shade materials now.
Oh.
So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so if you want your shades to look like a Jackson Pollock painting, you can buy it.
Why am I never excited about shades? It's like the least exciting, you know, it's like, I don't know.
Probably because you work in education, and the shades that go into education are always the cheapest, kind of crappiest things that you ever see, and they run so loud that, you know, they overpower everybody else in the room. That might be the reason.
Okay.
Mm. Hey, you could just have elementary school kids throw paint at
there you go.
Jackson Pollock.
And now they're Jackson Pollocks.
Aesthetic.
Exactly.
All right, Matt Scott, what's your favorite thing?
Probably the coolest thing I saw would have been, kind of as Rich mentioned, was the NFC stuff for Crestron. That was by far the most technical stuff I saw. The other thing that was interesting was just the number of people, you know, again, pushing soundbars and pushing small audio. There's a lot of companies that were, you know, showing headphones and stuff, which always makes me giggle a little bit. But it was an interesting show for me because there were not as many groundbreaking, shocking things. And I kind of say that with a salt because we always expect Crestron to bring something that's just ridiculous, kind of like what they did with the phone and the Google tablet. That was ridiculous. That was really, really cool. But I've kind of come to the point where I expect that. Mm-hmm. So if they had brought, you know, nothing really that cool, I probably wouldn't have been that excited about it. So
in other words, they didn't let you down, so it's not that exciting.
Yeah, they didn't let me down, which is always good.
All right, let me ask you guys one thing, because one thing out of both what all three of you have been talking about is displays and all these other little soundbars and stuff. do you see a time in the near future and maybe 5 or 6 years where these panels are going to get so thin? And let's be honest, you know, OLED is somewhat on the horizon. I'm more excited, so I see it closer than most. But that's going to get thinner and thinner, and these speakers are going to get thinner and thinner. And let's be honest, you know, a thin speaker does not necessarily mean a good one. Rich, do you think there's a time when you're going to go walk into Walmart or Best Buy and buy a TV that doesn't have a speaker on it?
Yes, and it'll wind up being either a Bluetooth attachment that connects to your stereo, or you can buy these wireless speakers if WiSA has anything to say with it. You know, yes. the new
yeah.
wireless, you know, speaker, you know, this wireless audio speaker alliance. You know, I do. I think there's going to get to be a point, or it's going to wind up going the route that it went with plasmas for a while, where you bought a plasma and it was just a monitor, and then you got these, you know, little Mickey Mouse ears that you hung on the side of it, or you know, you threw it up on the top. I mean, if you remember, that was a trend for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I think when the first plasmas came out, is that, you know, those things were so big and so heavy, we're like, oh yeah, I guess we ought to put speakers on it one of these days. I do think that we are going to see that the audio becomes an option as these things become more and more commoditized. Because again, we're still seeing it. You know, OLED is going to be, you know, sitting up at the top, and then there will be, you know, that point where they reach critical mass, and then we'll drop down again. But the other thing to consider, and I keep talking about this with people, is that we're viewing it from the perspective of people who have been used to large displays as our primary means of gathering information. We have an entire generation behind us who are going to be the next wave of consumers who are used to consuming their content on 4-to-10-inch screens.
Okay, that's valid.
And so I think that, you know, we're going to be in a little weird space with that. Because it is going to become a matter of where they're going to see it, and it really just becomes kind of the mirror of their iPad or their phone, and so they can either listen to it through their headphones, or they'll have a little set of, you know, wireless speakers, whatever flavor that is used for it, and then it'll pump out sound, whether it's two-channel, a sound bar, or, you know, maybe a 5.1 system. And I think, yeah, absolutely, within the next 3 years, that may be a segment that's going to kind of surprise people.
Very interesting.
Speaking of stripping things out of, like, a consumer display, do you think at some point we're just, you know, there's any point in including, like, a TV, you know, an over-the-air receiver into the TV to, you know, distinguish it between, you know, like, you know, to call it TV, it has to be able to pick up, you know, have a receiver in it versus a display, which, you know, just takes for inputs. But anymore, I mean, it seems like there are some people rely so even consumers rely so heavily on, you know, inputs. I'm not sure.
Well, I think it depends on if your cable or your satellite bill winds up reaching $300 within the next 2 years or something. Tim and I think we spoke about this, I don't know, maybe a month ago. We were talking about, you know, the streaming options and how those are going to start changing people's consumption patterns. You know, I mean, the thing about OTA, you know, for now it's still free. So, you know, will some people opt and cut the cord and consume their media that way, potentially, you know, with the other streaming options like Apple TV and Google TV and, you know, Roku and all of these other guys. I mean, I think what'll happen is once we get a point where we reach the critical mass where people can actually cut the cord without losing any of their favorite content, then we might start seeing something like that happen, where in an effort to kind of gain some kind of market share or bring the price down a little bit further, because they're going to have to keep cutting prices somewhere. And the only way you can keep doing it is start taking things out of it.
Yeah.
Well, and even there, you could still, I mean, I think manufacturers could all across the board just decide to cut out the tuners from their TVs and force people, if you really want that, you know, just buy our $30 tuner, you know, and add it to your system. You know, they could, yeah, just start stripping that out. And for the people who really want it, they can buy it. But, you know, that saves them, you know, however many dollars per TV.
I think you guys are onto something. I think these things are going to get so thin that pretty much the electronics are going to have to be outboard.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, there's just going to be a certain point where, you know, you this thing's 3 millimeters thick. Where are you going to put an antenna? And you can't even plug an HDMI cable into it at that point.
Oh, darn. Sorry. All right. You guys mentioned a couple of times Crestron was there. One of the coolest things that at least that I read about, I obviously wasn't there, is something called NFC. And NFC is near field communications. It's what makes your little when you go to the gym and unlock the door. That's what makes that works. If you have any kind of swipey, you know, pay for it thing, that's what makes that works. If you have a Google Android phone, that some of them have NFC in it and allows you to activate Google Wallet. Crestron has NFC now, and I think it's really, really cool. The fact that you can, in essence, trigger specific things to happen, and I'm not going to get into all the logic of it, but basically I can have an NFC device in my pocket, walk into a room, and boom, all of my presets are there. Mr. Cooper, is this not the coolest thing? Maybe not the coolest thing at Cedia, but it's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a whole lot of potential with that. Like, you know, like you said, you know, per person, you know, you walk in a room, you know, it knows everything you want to do. I think NFC, I mean, they had to start somewhere, and for right now, that seems to be the biggest mainstream standard, but. You know, I think there are potential other ways that, like, I think, yeah, it's a good first step. I think, like, even on the show, you know, how the show floor, the signals, the air is just clogged with everybody's signals. And I was in a demo and they were having even a few issues, you know, getting to recognize. And from what I see, you have to put it right on that sensor. And from my understanding, there are other competing things out there, like RFID type things that have more of a range. Like, you know, you can be, you know, further away from it, you know, not have to like put your phone directly on something to register it. I mean, I think it's definitely, it feels like an interface, you know, like it feels like the future. I think that's definitely the way things are heading. I just don't know if this will be like the final incarnation. I've heard the credit card companies are very quietly fighting over their own wireless standards, you know, besides NFC. And, you know, who knows, maybe that's what Apple's waiting out for.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, that was one of the rumors that was surrounding the iPhone 5, was that it would have NFC. Matt Scott, is this, you know, the latest, greatest thing for just residential, or can you see a possible, you know, commercial version or commercial use for this?
Oh, this would be huge in commercial. And they're already, you know, again, using it to a certain degree as far as access and stuff like that, in addition to biometrics and all that kind of fun stuff. It's something that, until we get some price points on what this stuff is going to cost, and then more importantly, as far as I'm concerned, how much it's going to cost to program, that's where we'll see how far the penetration will go. If it's something where, you know, this ends up costing, you know, for example, say $20,000 to integrate into a 6,000 square foot, you know, house, that'll be something completely different, to how, effective it could be. It'll be if it's something that, you know, may only cost a couple grand to integrate, let alone product alone. That all being said, I love where it's going. It's very, very cool. The one thing I'm kind of looking forward to is seeing what's involved in making it function when you've got multiple people in the room. So when Rich walks into the room and everything goes down to, you know, a balmy 72 degrees and he's playing, you know, whatever music he's listening to today, and then I walk in behind him and sit down on the couch beside him, and, you know, want it to chill back down to about, you know, 68 or 65 and play some Norah Jones, how is that going to be determined? Who, you know, that'll become a programming thing that'll be very interesting to see how that is affected.
Well, the psychology behind, yeah, I mean, the psychology behind the NFC isn't really once you're sitting down and you're watching TV. I mean, the way that I saw it, at least the way that I kind of view it being used, is as opposed to, and this is really all predicated upon the fact that everybody has a smartphone now, right?
Yeah.
Everybody has a smartphone. Prior to the smartphone explosion, it didn't really make a whole lot of sense because you were carrying a badge or something. I mean, this was what was originally done in Bill Gates' house with his traveling art collection, is that you would get an a necklace that would have your own RFID tag that would key to you, and as you walked through, based on proximity, it would go ahead and change and follow you, and it did a whole lot of things. This is that next evolution with NFC, the point being near-field communication, not just kind of broadcasting out there. So what happens, the way that I see it, is that in entrance and egress points, and this is would be in the boardroom, in the bedroom, in the classroom, you would either have your own smartphone that is your tag of your personalized information, or maybe you come into a classroom and somebody checks out an iPod Touch or, you know, a tablet or something to you. And as you come into the room, before, you know, where people would swipe or get proximity, you would just tap it near the light switch. It automatically starts the process. And you walk in and you take care of whatever you're doing. You then may switch over to the app and change channels, what have you. And then when you leave, you tap it on the way out and it shuts the process. The next person comes in, that's where the action occurs. That's where they say, okay, I'm taking over for this moment. Otherwise, they come in, sit down and hang out with you. And maybe there's a reader by the bedside, or maybe there's a reader on a little desktop station and that allows you to switch it. But I think the whole perception around NFC is it's not supposed to be broadcasting to anything within 15 feet of you. It's supposed to be almost tactile without you having to worry about touching the buttons and, you know, like with lighting systems, lighting control systems. Even the most sophisticated ones, you're going to have two or three buttons. You still have to label them. I can't tell you how many times that even though everybody knows what they're doing, they still walk up to the lighting keypad in the dark and go, okay, which one's on? And then they turn it on. you know, so that's where for environmental controls and less for entertainment controls, I think that's where NFC is going to get its purpose, really gain its purpose, where you don't have to deal with biometrics necessarily, you know, door locks, environment, lighting, and then, you know, maybe a preset. So it turns on the music. And as you walk into a room or walk out of a room, you can just go ahead and blip music on and off without having to give it a second thought.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that point, programmatically, you can go ahead and do whatever you like. And the beauty about the NFC as opposed to like RFIDs, NFC is a little bit more software friendly, where you can make your changes a little bit easier as opposed to having to reset the entire RFID tag. So I think that's where the evolution for NFC comes from, even if there is a competing standard down the line. More of it is going to be housed from a software standpoint as opposed to trying to hard code the tag itself.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. All right, guys, you're listening to AV Week. Thank you so much for joining us. With us is Matt Scott, Rich Fregosa, and Matt Cooper. One last CD Expo story, and I'm simply going to put it out there. I don't know. I've still never been to a CD, so. But this comes from strategy.com. There was an announcement after the Expo was over, that the attendance for it was at about 16,900, slightly down from last year. And I do say slightly because it was 17,600 last year. Matt Scott, we'll start with you on this one. Is that an issue? I mean, is that enough of a downturn or a fluctuation to say, oh my gosh, you know, CD is in trouble, or oh my gosh, the CI market is in trouble?
I don't think it's necessarily a sign that the industry or the show or the organization is in trouble, but I do think it does kind of, it's that constant debate that we've been having about trade shows in general. We've had it about NAB, we've had it about Infocom, we've had it about all the name shows, we've had it about just about every trade show out there, because, you know, it's not like people are flying around the country anymore for $99 as a rule. It costs money to go to these shows. And, you know, I think it's something where you're seeing more companies send their primary guys opposed to everyone in the company. You're seeing more companies, you know, maybe only sending one guy and kind of, you know, not hedging their bets, but, you know, telling him he's going to have a busy week. He's going to hit every booth that they need to talk to and, you know, do that kind of thing. The other side is, I think that we're also seeing a lot of the industry, not the industry guys, but the guys that are trying to get into our industry, at a very, say, entry level, are realizing that, you know, again, it does cost a lot of money to go to these kind of shows. And this maybe is not the easiest industry just to jump into, as some of them have seen. I know we've seen that locally with companies popping up lasting 6 months, a year, because, you know, they realize that this is not the same as pulling alarm wire. So I think the combination of that and then the combination of a lot of the manufacturers no longer seeming to support these kind of shows. Outside of Sony, there really wasn't a large manufacturer's or flat panel manufacturer at the show. Sharp was there and had a couple of products, but, you know, Samsung stuff was hard to find. Panasonic was hard to find. You know, a lot of those kind of guys weren't there. Den and Marantz weren't there again for, correct me, like the second or third year in a row.
They were in the high-performance rooms, yeah. So they right. opted, instead of doing the show floor, they were, the D&M side was doing more of the high-performance side of
exactly.
things, right?
And you know, that's also a different thing. You know, we saw that kind of with Infocom, too, with some of the big boys not showing up. And I kind of remember, again, coming from a lot of the pro stuff, I remember when Apple pulled out of doing NAB, and it was a really, really big deal. And that was, honestly, you know, probably 6-8 years ago. They pulled out, and it raised a big stink that they were no longer supporting the pro video market, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And their comeback was, well, you know, everyone in the show is displaying our software, so why would we come just to show what everybody else is already showing? And, you know, there is a point to that, but at the same time, it's not the same as being able to go and talk to a rep. So I think it all kind of comes together, but I don't think it's something where, you know, this is forecasting the downfall of Cedia. I think it's just the, you know, again, the economics of trade shows. And you guys know me, I'm a huge supporter of them.
Yeah.
But it's still like these shows cost a lot of money to go, to attend, and to, you know, especially if you're sending along a large crew. So I don't know. I think they are what they are.
Rich, is Matt Scott right? Is this not the death of Cedia?
No, it's definitely not the death of Cedia. I think that it's just a trend that we've seen in all of the shows. And, you know, I mean, obviously the residential market is going to be affected much differently by the, you know, the housing market meltdown than commercial or education or government is. You know, we obviously follow the construction industry very closely. So whichever way the construction industry goes, so goes Cedia in a lot of respects. I think, you know, Ted's article was spot on in a lot of respects, in that, you know, one of the things was that, yeah, attendance was slightly down, but the energy was definitely different. In past years, 10, 15 years ago, absolutely, you'd have companies show up and they'd have 10 guys in tow. You know, just wearing all the shirts, and they look like, you know, they'd be like the AVISPL of the Cedia world. You know, it's like all of a sudden you see them marching down the aisles, you know, arm in arm, and you know, you'd hear the Imperial March behind them. And one of the things that we noticed is that, like Matt said, is that, you know, you got decision makers. So the only troubling part to me about that is because you had the principals of the company and the decision makers are responsible for the kind of the business of doing business. We weren't educating as much of the technicians at that point. There was a lot of changes in the class structure. And so the concerns that I have and what I see from the benefit of the trade show is from the education side. You know, the argument has been from all these manufacturers, which is, well, if we have our own shows, then we can go ahead and teach you everything that you need to know about our product. Well, that's all well and good, but what if maybe you need to look at another product, or you need to look at three different products instead of being in one place to be able to get the vendors on a common playing field to be able to make your decisions? The vendors are saying, oh, no, we want to bring you over to our space so that you have to decide if you want to expend three times the effort to go ahead and look at our product and then the two other competing products. So, and it was funny, it was Mitch Klein actually had written about it in one of the Cedia posts, which was, you know, yeah, the manufacturers in some respects were being selfish. because they were absolutely saying, no, 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 we don't, we want to create a captive audience. And so by not being there, we're in essence going to handcuff our dealers to come to our events as opposed to expending the efforts to promote the industry. And that's kind of what I felt more than anything else. Instead of it being in a collaborative effort as an association, it was feeling kind of like an every man for himself approach from the vendor standpoint. And, you know, potentially maybe that's the way the market's going, but I feel that the purpose of an association like CEDIA is the fact that it is a fraternity and sorority, and if we can get more women in it to be able to exchange information and to be able to build our industry as a whole and kind of, you know, bootstrap ourselves up. And we got socked in the jaw. Yeah. You know, there's no way around it. And the custom market, the residential market, is far different than the commercial and government and educational market. And, you know, sometimes we don't understand each other. And it's a different type of client. There's different type of projects. And, yeah, you know, most of the times, you know, maybe from the commercial side, you'll see and say, oh, it's just a TV and stereos. And, yeah, you know, maybe that's the kind of thing that a big box retailer does. But a lot of these guys in the systems, we were at the awards banquet on Saturday night. These were epic installations. I mean, these were epic installations where part of teaching our industry is not only that, yeah, you can sell these systems and you read about this stuff in the magazine, but you can actually put something together for your client. And not only do they go, holy cow, that was awesome, but they go, holy freaking cow, I own this.
Yeah.
You know, this is my house. You know, I'm not in a demo room. This is my house. And the excitement wasn't necessarily there about getting the industry moving in. You know, we're no longer, and I had this conversation several times with a lot of vendors, is that we are no longer audio video people. If that is your market, you are not going to survive. We are technology companies, and that is an all-encompassing phrase at this point.
Well, and that's also a shift between what you guys were 10 years ago and 15 years ago. Between, you know, the VCR repairman, as you so affectionately refer to yourself. That is a markedly different shift between, you know, VCR repairman to a technology concierge, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that I think that's not only is it poignant, but it's also very important for you to note, because unless you make that shift, you're not going to survive the next 5 years.
Oh, you could totally, 10 years ago, you could have made your living as the TV guy or the speaker guy. No longer. And that's exactly it, is that we are shifting and we're seeing competition from other markets, you know. And same way with commercial, is that our biggest competition isn't one another. Our biggest competition is the IT, you know, is IT technology, because every device that we have now has a LAN port on it or a Wi-Fi chip. That's their playground. And we need to find ways to harness their technology instead of them using that as the Trojan horse to take our technology.
Yeah. All right. Last couple more stories here real quick. Let's get out of CEDIA and on to Toys R Us, which is just, I'm sorry. This is a place that Mr. Fergoza and I both spend a lot of time in.
The world's biggest toys. I still remember the jingles.
Yeah. They have a tablet, which, you know, great, because my six-year-old needs one, I think. I don't know.
Every six-year-old needs one.
I don't know. She doesn't need one. We'll see. Matt, in all seriousness, Coop, well, sort of seriousness, Cooper, it's an Android-based tablet. Great. Mm-hmm. It's $150. Even better. And it's geared for kids. It's called the Tabio. It's marketed for Toys R Us. 7-inch. Is this something that, I mean, Rich mentioned it earlier, that this generation is growing up watching 7-inch and 10-inch screens? Is this just something you expected, or should we have expected by now?
I mean, it's a super clever move from. You know, the price point is really low, and it's a clever move to get, you know, kids trained on that interface instead of an iPad. You know, get them on this, you know, device that parents feel comfortable with, since it's presumably some kind of walled garden. They're not just going to be able to go into the Android marketplace and download whatever they want. But at the same time, you know, they're on a tablet. It's an Android tablet, and, you know, it's I don't know. It seems like it's going to get, you know, a lot of traction.
Matt Scott, is this something you're going to buy for your niece and nephew?
No, I'd get them an iPad.
See, that's a... why do I even ask?
Here's why. Because they're already... You know, again, I think it's a different thing. If they are not exposed to it, they may not play with it. They may not see the difference. But I know that my four-year-old niece, if I give her this Toys R Us branded tablet, she's going to look at me and say, "Where's the cat game?" And I'm going to go, "Honey, it's not on this one." And she's going to go, "Well, I want to play the cat game."
What's the cat game?
It's some stupid little game where you can, okay. I don't know.
I just didn't know if she didn't know what Angry Birds was or not. So.
No, she isn't.
She's Canadian birds.
Oh, there it is. 15 minutes in and we have our first Canadian joke. Okay.
They're polite birds. Yes, we have a different game.
Yeah, polite birds. Slightly miffed birds.
Yes.
It basically, the entire game is birds just apologizing to you.
Well, you throw them at each other and they go, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Please excuse me. Sorry, was I in the way of your flight path?"
Apologetic birds. Oh, my.
But, you know, that's kind of the thing for me is, you know, again, if you're just giving it to your child or whoever who has no experience with anything else, they may be fine. But I know myself, my 7-year-old nephew and 4-year-old niece, they know my iPhone and iPad games. They know what they like to play with.
So you think they're already brand lock-in, even at that age?
Exactly. And it's something where one of my friends, she has a 2-year-old and plays on their iPad all day long. FaceTimes, the whole deal. They're over in New York. And it's something where, I don't know, I kind of feel that it's kind of the same as, you know, giving a kid a G.I. Joe versus the off-brand thing you found at the dollar store. For a couple of days, he'll be happy, and then he'll realize, wait, this isn't the same as none of the things work in my G.I. Joe, you know? And I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm being cynical. Maybe I'm going to be a terrible parent for these reasons, but...
Well, speaking of that, let's ask a
of me being a terrible parent?
No. That was a bad transition. I apologize. Somebody who I know the answer to this, because he bought his 1-year-old an iPad.
Yeah.
Mr. Fergoza, I know you're not buying this.
No, I'm not. But personally, dealing with the issue of a cracked iPad right now, I would say that potentially as kind of a starter kit for the toddler set, if it's a little bit more robust and a little bit locked down, might I think about it? Yeah, but quite honestly, I'd still look at it and go, "Oh, for $150 I can get this, but for another $150 I can get what my kid's actually going to use."
Yeah.
The problem that I have with it is that it's just a device unto itself. And the beauty of the iPad or even the Android is the fact that they are a family of products. So, you know, you're going to be able to keep your same accounts and your apps. And the problem that I see with this is that, you know, they tell you, "Oh, great, we've got our own app store," which means that you're going to be buying a whole new set of programs for one single device. And that's the part that, you know, I looked at and went, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because really the whole point of the tablets and the smart devices is the applications. And so with, you know, Google or with you know, the iOS environment, you know, you buy it once on your account. If all your devices are on the account, you're not buying it again. So you're not buying Apologetic Bird 6 times.
Oh, my.
Do I see it? It reminds me, you know what it reminds me of is I would be more inclined to buy it if LeapFrog got into the market.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because then it would be an extension of their ecosystem. Yeah. But just somebody throwing out their own just for the heck of it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. If there was an established player, like if there was like if this was an extension of the Leap Pad, which I've used for my kids and I absolutely love because I think it does teach them, you know, kind of the primers of how to do things, then absolutely I would wind up doing it. But the fact that this is just kind of all by itself, I'll be interested to see what the sales figures look like in a year.
Yeah, well, or if they still even offer it, so.
Right.
Well, and when I first saw this story, I thought it was a Leap Pad. I thought it was something from the Leap Pad.
It looks, it has the same form factor.
Yeah, and I went, oh, that makes sense. Yeah. And then when I read it wasn't, I was like, oh, never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's silly.
All right, guys, last but not least, we're going to talk about UHF spectrums.
Woohoo!
You actually woohooed.
I had to. Why not?
Not for nothing, but our buddy George Tucker, who does the Live Life, actually just did a special on wireless and RF spectrum. So this is still in my brain. Well, of course he did. He had a guy from Sennheiser on, a couple other guys. Again, much smarter than me. But the FCC is actually looking to sell off the UHF spectrum. We'll start with the Canadian because he won't care. What do you think about this, Mr. Scott? I mean, is this a good idea? Is it a bad idea? Is it going to screw all of our stuff up?
I might as well say I just don't care.
You just don't care.
I just don't care. Do whatever you want.
What do you guys use? Do you use UHF?
Yeah, we have UHF. Okay. Yep. And we're just we have our own version of the FCC.
Do you call yours the devil too?
No, we don't. Actually, yes, we do. Who am I kidding? Yeah, ours. our favorite aspect of it is the fact that we have actually Canadian content laws. So what that means is they not only regulate airspace and everything else, but they regulate what's actually broadcast. Hence, why I can't get ESPN up here in Canada, because we already have a Canadian station that shows sports.
Seriously?
Yeah, that's pretty much when you read through the whole filing and get right down to it, that's pretty much what it says.
Wow.
Yeah, like for example, or in addition, we can't get USA Network.
Because
A, it says USA, but B, because they show the main thing that was cited in their ruling was that USA shows reruns of what is it, NCIS. Almost all day long.
Okay.
And we already have a station that shows reruns of NCIS almost all day long. You know, it's a little bit more legalese than that, but that pretty much what it comes down to. So, you know, I will say this, that our Canadian FCC essentially kind of follows suit. So when you guys start auctioning stuff, we kind of start auctioning stuff. When there was the big crossover band and, you know, all the microphone issues, wireless mic issues that we had, you know, 3-4 years ago, we dealt with the same exact thing. Because again, we get a lot of bandwidth here that's identical to your bandwidth and crossover bandwidth. So we follow in your shadows or your UHF bandwidth.
Shadows, yeah.
Shall we say?
All right. All right, Mr. Fregosa, is this a big deal? Should we be concerned? Should we run for the hills or...
The funniest thing is I'm old enough to remember that I had a UHF dial on my TV as a kid. You had two knobs. You had the VHF, you had the UHF, and you turned the channels with obviously the pliers because, you know, the dial blew off on my TV when I was a kid.
Yes.
The only thing that kind of popped into the back of my mind is that here in San Francisco, we have Sutro Tower, which is like a 300-foot gigantic tower. It's like when you see the cityscape of San Francisco, there's this big, orange and white tower sitting on top of one of our giant hillsides. And it has a broadcast transmission length of good 150, 200 miles for our TV and our radio. And my first thought was, you know, there was a low-speed data network that Google or somebody else put together that we weren't necessarily using our cell towers for, and we weren't having to worry about putting, free Wi-Fi every place else. But you had just kind of a constant data stream broadcast connection. You could push a lot of things out onto smart devices inexpensively.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where my thinking went, which was, with the advent of smartphones, with the advent of tablets and everything else, look at what Amazon's doing with the Kindle, I mean, in essence, they're licensing their own spectrum just to be able to push stuff out directly to it. That was kind of my thought, which was, what if they came out with something that you could go ahead and stream video or audio as a broadcast channel as opposed to eating up your data rate, on your phone? Lower consumption, kind of pushing everything out. I could see that working.
You should sell your ideas, Rich. You really should. Don't give them away for free.
You know? Well, you know, but seriously, what if Netflix built their own?
Oh yeah, absolutely, dude. Yeah, I'm not kidding you. That would be actually absolutely huge. For the first person to actually come up with a good way to do that. So
could they do it and then, you know, skirt past the CRTC up here in Canada so we could get, like, grown-up real Netflix?
No.
Please, come on.
All you get is reruns of CSI.
Yeah. Mr. Cooper, is this a huge deal? Or like Rich said, should we just, like, start getting guys like Netflix and Amazon to push out video content to us?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Not really necessarily my area of expertise,
just
make it up as you go. That's what we do.
That's right? What we do.
I mean, I think, it makes sense to me to, start, you know, the stuff is just worth so much money. You know, these frequencies, if they're not being used, you know, to the fullest, you know, start making more room for, make more room for data and stuff. Now it's a much bigger push to sort of close up the digital divide, make it, you know, cheaper, easier for carriers to get on it. Or if you look at even, I don't know if like Wi-Fi devices would be able to get in on this, but if, there are whole, I saw at Cedia, there are whole companies who sell spectrum analyzers to, because, you know, they're just so gummed up with everything. So I think, you know, the more room you give to spread things out, that could only... can only help.
Absolutely. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us. Thanks so much for joining us. With us this week has been Mr. Matt Cooper from Rave Publications. Thank you so much, sir.
Yep. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Anything you want to pimp or promote there, sir?
continue checking out our post-show coverage at ravenowcedia.com. And actually, we just got back from... the Almo E4 Pro AV Tour. And so if you want to check out the videos from that show that we just got back from yesterday, it's at ravenowe4.com. And of course, just check out news at ravepubs.com.
Awesome. Also with us is Mr. Rich Fregosa, fregosadesign.com, fregosadesign.com. You're becoming a regular journalist there, sir.
I'm really digging it. It's been a fun feather in my cap, and this whole social media thing has been pretty darn cool. And absolutely, as part of the inaugural class of the 2012 CE Pro Blog Mob, it was a lot of fun being with. It was really interesting because we were 8 industry professionals, each coming with our own different slant, and our editor, our supreme commander Julie Jacobson, just said, "Go be do." And we were even immortalized, along with Matt Scott and a few other people, by Draper in a noir-type artistic setting, which is actually
pretty
cool. Yeah, being part of the press is cool when you get your very own cartoon artist representation of you being kind of dapper, and it's pretty cool stuff. Enjoying the CE Pro, again, the part of the inaugural social media team, along with Matt, we were... the CEDIA tweets, and we were live tweeting and wrote a lot of blogs on the CEDIA site itself, a lot of great information. And like I said, between us and Rave Pubs and Residential Systems, who, you know, also a great group of people, definitely an opportunity for people to either go to any of our 3 sites and get a comprehensive tour of everything went on CEDIA. Like I did a full... 6 or 7 minute video of the touch panel gallery, the touch panel design gallery,
yes. Mm-hmm.
And a couple other kind of fun videos and talking to people. And so if you couldn't attend CEDIA, go to any of their, you know, Rave's got their snippet booth tips. We have some longer videos and introductions, and it was a lot of fun. So yeah, the power of the press is pretty darn cool.
Yeah, very cool. Anything you want to promote other than that, your website, your Twitter handle, anything?
Please follow me on Twitter, at R Fregosa. As my wife put on the back of my business cards, we love referrals.
Holy Lord, yeah.
The website is in a bit of a redesign right now. I actually have to put all the things that I've written on there. Definitely follow, catch us on Twitter, Google+, every place else, and happy to spread the word of the industry. I love being an advocate.
Absolutely. All right. And last but not least, Mr. Matt D. Scott from Omega Audio Video. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
What Twitter or website would you like to promote, sir?
Well, let's promote Omega Audio Video, which is omegaaudiovideo.com or at Omega Audio Video, and also mattdscott.com or at mattdscott on Twitter as well. Or, you know, look for our new and upcoming iOS game, Apologetic Birds.
Oh, jeez.
It's going to be a party.
It's going to be awesome. Wait. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry. Did I knock down your house?
I'm so sorry.
My apologies.
All right.
Let me get my checkbook.
All right. My name is Tim Albright. If you would like to follow me, it is Tim. Oh, I'm sorry, Tim. I should make it my own. TD, Tim David Albright, ALBRIGHT. But more importantly for me and everybody here, please go by the website, avnation.tv, avnation.tv, or our partner site, Rave Pubs, ravepubs.com/avnation, ravepubs.com/avnation. That's all the time we have for AV Week.